Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast for another episode of the show. Now, today we're having a really important conversation about staying safe online or cyber safety. This is a little different to cyber security, which we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. Very closely related, but different. Today we're talking about people and policies and practices, whereas when we spoke about cyber security, we spoke about systems and IT infrastructure. So today I'm joined by Susan McLean, who is Australia's foremost expert when it comes to cyber safety. She spent the first 27 years of her working life as a Victorian police officer. She spent a couple of visits going to the United States to study with the FBI to understand all about the behaviors of those people online that would seek to harm us so that we can put in place harm minimization strategies. Today, we're going to talk about people and policies and procedures, and we're going to talk about what goes wrong in a dental practice. And you'd be surprised, it's often something very simple that has a catastrophic impact. It could be as simple as clicking on a dodgy email or a whole lot more. But in addition to these forms of safety, we're going to talk about best practice online. How do we minimize reputational harm? What sort of policies do we need to have in place for our team? What happens with their social media accounts? Do we have a right to ask them to behave in a certain way online? And if so, how does that work? We're going to talk about cyber stalking, what to do if you've had a cyber stalker. And I can tell you from personal experience, having had a cyber stalker, it's a deeply, deeply unpleasant experience. And so we want to make sure that you know what to do and how to handle that should it ever happen. And if you think it won't happen to you, well, I'm going to say I felt that way too, but it did happen to me. And as I said, it was pretty tough. So I want to make sure that you don't experience any of those things. So as always, have a pen and paper handy because there's lots of good stuff here we're talking about today. There's also a section there at the end of the podcast for parents of kids about keeping them safe online as well. And I think if you're a parent, you're going to want to tune into that as well. It's a short section, but some really good strategies and hints there for you as well. So without any further ado, here's Susan McLean. I hope you enjoy this podcast as much as I enjoyed recording it. Susan McLean, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang with us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How's things in Melbourne town today?
In Melbourne today, it is all sorts of wonderful because the sun's shining and it's already about 20 degrees, so won't have much time to enjoy it, but it's a lovely day in Melbourne.
Yeah, you do lots of travel for your work, which is all about educating people around, you know, online safety and cyber safety in general, which we're going to have a big long talk about today because this is a fertile ground, lots of interesting things to talk about. But before we get into that, I'm always curious. Yeah, you and I are of a similar vintage. I would imagine when you were growing up and going through school, this was not a career possibility because the online world didn't exist. Tell me, how did you find your way into this? What led you to down this path?
Well, I do find it interesting because, you know, I remember sitting down with my careers teacher in year 10, you know, and influencer and content creator were not two words that would come out of her mouth at the time, which I still find is really odd when people call me those things, amongst other things. But I was a police officer in Melbourne for 27 years to start with, and I took my first report of cyberbullying in February 1994. And that was quite a shock to me that the internet could be misused. In 1994, I didn't own a mobile phone and I wasn't odd, didn't have the internet at home and certainly were not connected at work. So Victoria Police was still really backwards when it came to technology. So it was quite a shock to me to work out that, you know, I would tap away on a computer and go, wow, this is magic. But people had already worked out how to misuse it. And it was a group of year eight girls that had a falling out. Then some of them went online. They set up, they went into an adult sex chat room and they posted an ad offering their ex-friend for free sex with her name, her address and her phone number.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, we had to move that family into a rental property for their safety because we couldn't stop the stream of men knocking on the door looking for the 13-year-old daughter. So, you know, it was a very different time. I mean, I'd used a computer at university. It was probably, you know, half the size of the MCG and you had to write on cards and you had to feed it through and hope for the best. It never worked. So, you know, that's called coding now and it's really cool, but it wasn't then. So
I remember those days. And actually, it's funny, that put me off computers, I reckon, for a decade.
And you, the cards would go through and then you think, oh, my God, there's only a couple left. And you go, ding, 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 ding. And then you have to start again.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare. But, you know, we've progressed and technology is a great invention without a doubt. But that sparked an interest, and it was like, oh, I really need to get my head around this. Mm. And then that set me on the path to where I am today. So I was very lucky. I connected with a guy in the FBI over in the States, because they were way ahead of us when it came to the proactive side of things, because, you know, we were still that geographic isolation thing, which was relevant in the early days of the internet, which is not now. And he took a liking to me, which was really nice of him, in a professional way, of course, and basically said, if you can get yourself to America, we will fund all your training. There's probably one other person in Australia that did the FBI training that I did. One's retired, I know that. So I was very lucky. So over to America I went, did a whole lot of training run by the University of New Hampshire, which then trains the FBI agents. And I was able to do that. I think I did that three times over three different years. That sort of increased my knowledge of the issue. I was the first Victorian police officer appointed to a position involving online safety and young people. So I established and managed the Victoria Police Cyber Safety Project for 12 months. And we did a lot of research that looked at this from a policing perspective and a prevention perspective. And then, like most hierarchical organisations, if you're thinking outside the box or you're doing something that's a bit different, they don't really support you, and that's typical. And, you know, I had high-ranking police say to me, you know, that you're blonde and female, you haven't got much going for you, have you?
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Wow.
And, you know, and it was like, you know what, I've got the knowledge. And the media took a liking to me. Like, I don't, you know, court media or anything, but they took a liking to me and wanted to interview me. And Vic Pohl kept saying, no, she's not available. And in the end, I went to work one day and I never went back. I came home, I said to my husband, I'm quitting. It's it. And I had nothing. I had no business plan. I had nothing. It was like, can't do this anymore. Because I was sick of being put down for something I knew that was right. Mm. And I was very lucky then that I had two conferences confirmed. That's the only work I had, were two conference presentations, one for the Association of Heads of Independent Schools and one for the Australian Sports Commission.
Wow.
And then that then generated its own, you know, a little bit of extra work, then a bit of more work, then a bit more work, and away I went. You know, it wasn't part of the grand plan. My grand plan was to make Victoria Police a better place.
Mm.
But I can do more with my knowledge now that I'm not
confined,
by the
So clearly there's a big demand for your services, because we spoke off air about the amount of flights you do per year, which is just mind-boggling. Makes my eyes water just thinking about it. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about the most common threats that we see. Now, being mindful, of course, that we are talking to a business audience, you know, people running this, the small to medium enterprise, in this case, a dental practice. What are the most common things that you see that is going to impact a business owner in that sense? And I'm thinking mainly from a professional point of view, but equally, if there are things that might cross into the personal realm, happy to go there too.
So what all business owners need to understand is, if you are gathering data on someone, your customers, your clients, your patients, then you have something that's valuable to someone else.
Mm.
So you have to accept that there is a risk to your business based on what you're doing online. Now, how much a risk there is, and, you know, how interesting you are to hackers and what can they obtain, you know, that's going to be on a sliding scale of risk. So, you know, very small, you know, one dental practice in the middle of nowhere, you know, small clientele, that's going to be very different to a company or a dentist that owns five practices,
yep,
for example. You know, there might be four dentists in each practice and a lot of stuff. So, you know, there's like a risk profile attached to your business. But I want to get across is, there is a risk. Do not ever think that there is no risk. There is also reputational risk in the way that your staff might behave on their personal pages that can be linked back to you. And then there is the like the vexatious litigant sort of person that, you know, gives you 20 one-star reviews on Google,
mm,
you know, that are, you know, not truthful and not based on anything other than the person is vindictive. And that is a huge issue for any sort of business, because, you know, some people are discerning and thinking, oh, you know, clearly this is someone, you know, with ill intent. But there are plenty of people that go, you know what, look at these one-star reviews. I am not going to let that person near me.
Mm.
And there was a case in Melbourne where a dentist did sue someone for false reviews and won, which was really good. Now, she got several thousand dollars in compensation. But in reality, that probably does little to undo the harm to that business. So there are things that you've got to understand. You know, you're there, you're out there. And even if you don't have a Facebook page for your business, and you know, even if you don't have a website, or you do, you know, people can post about you and your business to other platforms. There's the technical side of protecting yourself and making sure you've got, you know, good tech processes in place. And again, you know, Optus, Medibank Private clearly did not in some regards. So there's that. And then there's the human error sort of thing, which is often the downfall of a lot of small businesses.
I wanted to talk a little bit about policies, because I know you and I spoke a little bit off air about the importance of having a really good policy about behavior online for your team members. Because if we get this wrong, then again, we can see misuse of those accounts. You can see reputational harm and so on. Can you just walk me through what you're thinking is in that space, equally what you might have seen in the past, where it's gone right, where it's gone hopefully not too wrong, but some war stories perhaps. And then, you know, what would be the best practice for practices to move forward with?
So even if your staff are covered under a professional body such as APRA or anything else, you still should have a practice-specific policy. So it's part of the employment agreement, the employment contract, you know, whatever you're calling it, when you employ staff. And that is about behaviour. And, you know, historically there would have been an acceptable behaviour part of that contract. You know, can't come to work drunk and can't do drugs, like all of that. But now there needs to be something to do with online behaviours and what's going to be expected in this particular workplace. Now, remembering, other than, you know, putting conditions on someone that are unlawful, as the boss or the employer, you can put reasonable conditions on anyone. It's your business. You can do what you like, really, provided you're on the right side of the law. The things that I see go wrong are when people have a vague statement about, we expect your online behavior to be respectful at all times, with no explanation of what that might look like, how it might be applied, what it might cover, and things like that. Or I see people mention a specific platform. You know, you should not have a personal Facebook page that mentions your workplace. Great, well, I'll just go to Instagram and TikTok. You know, so you've got to be mindful of how you word those things, because the general comment that is not specific will not stand up if you decide to sack someone or, you know, terminate their employment, because they'll go, well, hang on a minute, I've behaved this way for the last 10 years, no one's ever called me up on it. How was I meant to know that it wasn't acceptable in this situation? So people now, I think, are, you know, fighting back more, if you like, when it comes to dismissal, fair or otherwise. And, you know, they'll have a crack at trying to get back at you. So be specific in your employment documents about what you expect from your employees. And that needs to cover, you know, dress. You are within your rights to talk about piercings and tattoos and visible tattoos. You know, there's all those things. There's, you know, uniform requirements, or neat and tidy, or clean, like whatever you're going to talk about. And then there's the online component about how you expect them to interact at work. Now, you might be happy for them to go, hey, I work at, you know, Dr. Smith's dental practice, or you might not want that. So they're things that you need to consider, because even if they don't say they work at Dr. Smith's dental practice, if I find that person online and I just Google them, there's a fair chance they'll come up somewhere with a link back to you. And you know, I call that guilty by association.
Yeah.
Is it fair? No, it's not. Does it happen? Yes, it does.
Well, we were talking a little bit off air. I had a friend of mine who had a team member who basically fit the mold of the ideal employee. In a sense, they had their uniforms well pressed, their hair was always done, you know, really polite, really nice person. But as soon as you went to their social media profile, that person was not wearing much in the way of clothing. And there were some concerns about brand harm and practice reputation being damaged by association. Is that something that you see commonly, not commonly, or is it an isolated thing?
Yeah, no, it's not isolated at all. And, you know, I will often say, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're on your employee's Facebook profile or you're on your own personal account. You are by default a representative of that organization. Therefore, you are obligated to align to the values and the expectation of that organization. One of the worst ones I saw is a couple of, like in education, of a teacher that her, and she didn't even have a professional looking photo, but she had dressed up in the uniform of the school in which she taught. So she liked to play naughty schoolgirl at night.
Oh my God.
And she had fishnet tights on and black high heel shoes, but clearly she'd ratted through lost property, grabbed the uniform of the school in which she taught, and that was her publicly accessible Facebook page. I have another teacher that has a part-time job. Well, she's not a teacher anymore, but she was a teacher, and she had a part-time job as a burlesque dancer, quite a lawful profession, but, you know, didn't have permission from the Victorian Education Department to have that part-time job. And her page, which was open to the public and easily found, if you ever Googled her, it took you straight to the burlesque page, you know, was full of content that, you know, I couldn't even show in a public presentation. It was that, you know, no, obscene's not the right word, but it was not suitable for public consumption.
Hmm.
And, you know, that person then had to make a decision about whether she's going to be a school teacher or a burlesque dancer. And she was sort of shuffled out the door. So, you know, you are, by virtue of how you're employed, you know, beholden to the values of that organization. And I always say, you know, as a police officer, I could get a job as a topless waiter or waitress, you know, it's not an illegal job. I could do that. But was it aligned to my organization's values? And would they give me permission for that? And that would be no. Pete the plumber from down the road, they will have a different value system or different expectation to someone that's in a more professional occupation. And you've got to make your staff aware of that.
Yeah. And what about the accounts that are private? So the employer might not necessarily see it, but then the friends and associates of that particular team member can see it. I mean, I know I'm probably getting into the tactics a little bit into the weeds, but how do you manage at the coalface, how do you manage that?
So first of all, before you employ anyone, you need to do your due diligence.
Yes.
And that means that you are going to spend several hours, not several minutes, but several hours trawling through the internet to see what you can find about this person that is now, if you employ them, going to represent your business by default.
Yep.
So you want to find everything you can find. Now, you might find some bits, you might not. You might find their Instagram account and it says set to private. So at that point, there's nothing much more you can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people go, oh, you have a private account. I can do what I like. No one will know. Well, it doesn't work that way because you're only as safe as the people you engage with.
Mm.
And I remember it was a very well-known AFL player years ago who was, you know, a really nice guy, got an ATAR of, you know, 98, so very unusual for a footballer. Yeah. You know, so a really good guy, and he had all his social media accounts set to private. He didn't really do anything untoward, and he made a comment on his private page, something about the match review committee. Now, there was no swear words. There was nothing offensive. It was like, you know, perhaps I need to go to Specsavers and get glasses, and one of his friends' private account took a screenshot of that and sent it to the media. So, you know, that's obviously, if you can't see what they're doing online, that's where it's going to come back to bite you when someone sees it and goes, oh, my goodness, you know, here's Mary the dental nurse, look what she's doing, or Tom the dental nurse, I'll just send this to the media or their workplace or whatever. So we want to, and that's where education is so important about, you know, acceptable, respectful and responsible use of social media and technology.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so there's a whole bunch of stuff there. So the big lesson there from what I'm picking up is have a clearly articulated policy that outlines what acceptable is and what is not in detail. And then, of course, you know, do due diligence when you're recruiting people, not just a quick flick through Google. It's a couple of hours of good research. And then, of course, you know, communicating that with the team, I guess, really effectively as well about saying, you know, this is where we are. This is what we stand for. You know, whether you're at work or not at work, you are representing our practice. So please understand that these are our values and we expect you to uphold those in your personal conduct as well. Is that essentially covering the bases?
And that's on and offline because, you know, you don't want them, you know, at a barbecue on the weekend drunk and stealing work secrets. So it's across the board. But, you know, there is still that, and I see it in education, you know, teachers going, oh, but it's my right to do this. It might be your right to do something, but is it a good choice?
Mm.
And ultimately the answer to that, usually if you've got to ask yourself, is it a good choice? The answer is no.
No.
So we need people to understand that. And I think it's also the way it's framed rather than being, you know, the draconian boss, you know, it's my way or the highway, you know, it really is for their benefit. Because if they stuff up online and you sack them, there's a fair chance they're probably not going to get another job. And I'm guessing the dental profession, like many other professions, you know, people talk to each other.
Of course.
And, oh, my God, look what happened here, or look what happened here, or avoid this person at all costs. So, you know, you've got to be mindful of that. And the way you conduct yourself online should be an extension to, you know, it is an extension of how you are as a person. So you don't sort of go online and be someone different. And we expect that to be respectful and responsible. Don't list specific social media platforms in a policy, because by the time, you know, you've got around the degree, they're out of date. So, you know, you make general statements about, you know, social media and other online accounts. So you make it general. And that means if a new account, if a new platform pops up next week, you are covered as well.
Perfect. Okay. Love it. Interestingly enough, I tell my oldest daughter, because she has social media now that she's 18, I'm the world's toughest parent. Our kids don't get social media until they're 18, but that's a whole other conversation. But I've been saying to her for ages now, you know, be mindful of what you post, because, you know, this will live on beyond the time you post it. Nothing is deleted and people will find it, and it will affect your future prospects throughout life. So just be very, very careful. And so I guess for the team to understand that as well, it is a useful life lesson as much as an employment lesson.
Yeah.
I wanted to come back to the two types of hackers that we spoke about. One is, you know, one demanding ransom, and the other one, this is a bit of a nuisance hacker. Can you just walk us through those types of situations that we might encounter if someone's, you know, either trying to break into your system, like in the, you know, the Medibank or the Optus scenario? It's hard to stop hackers sometimes, but anyway, that's probably another conversation. But what about other, I suppose, more nuanced ways of attacking, whether it's an email attachment or something like that?
So that's where we see more small business systems getting hacked, because in reality, you know, Harry the hacker that's sitting in his bedroom in Russia does not know about Dr. Smith the dentist, you know, in downtown wherever.
Yeah.
So what they will do, it's opportunistic offending. They will put a whole lot of emails out or messages out or whatever, with a click here link. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been warning people about don't click links for, you know, at least 15 years, but people still click links.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, you know, your account's compromised, you know, enter the new details here so that, oh, yeah, do that. And all of a sudden the whole thing shuts down. So, you know, there's that targeted hack, which would be Medibank, Optus, Latitude Financial. You know, they are targeting them because they know who they are and what they have.
Mm.
Optus, there was two parts to Optus. There was, and I don't think with Optus anyone, there wasn't the ability to get credit card details. So this was being able to perhaps set up another identity in your name, get your 100 points, get a credit card, rack up a bill and leave you with that mess. Where they can get in and get, you know, if you're at your practice, you store credit card information about your patients, that's valuable information for them to have, because they can use that and go on a spending spree. But mostly for small business, it becomes that nuisance value. Some will ask for ransom, some won't. There was a case a couple of years ago in Melbourne. It was a group of cardiologists. I think they operated out of Cabrini, from memory. Their system got hacked, and basically they lost every patient note and detail that cardiac had. Then there was a ransom, you know, like if you want it all back, pay this. Now, the thing with ransoms, and this is for anyone, so this is for, you know, when you are talking to your teenage son who is tempted to send a nude photo to the hot girl online and gets extorted, which is really common, it is for anything online. You do not pay a cent, ever, 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 because by paying money, you are telling the offender that you have a willingness and a capacity to pay.
Mm.
What will happen is I'll take their money and go, good, I've got them. And then they're going to go, oh, well, thanks. That $6,000 is now a deposit. I just need $6,000 more and then I'll give you the stuff back. So that's why none of those big hacks ever paid a cent, which was 100% correct, because we don't give that away. Are you going to get your data back if you pay your money? No, you're not. You know, so I can personally promise you that either. So, you know, it's a moot point. So what we want is to work on protecting our data and making sure that we're not clicking things that might compromise it rather than having to fix the mess at the end. So you never pay an online ransom. It's not going to fix the problem. So there is sometimes a capacity for a forensic IT person to retrieve your data, sometimes there's not. This is where backups are really important. Don't put all your chickens in the one basket or your eggs in the one basket. So, you know, you might have you have your data, but it needs to be stored elsewhere as well, so that if the main system goes down, you've got, you know, a backup system, whatever that you're going to use, you've got that. So at least it's an inconvenience, but, you know, after 24 hours, you should be good to go again. The other one I always say is, if you are ever compromised, please let your patients know that this has happened. The level of information that's been coming from these organizations, I find appalling. The victims, if you like, were all left to their own devices to try to work out, you know, who's who in the zoo and what was impacted and all of this sort of stuff. So, you know, be upfront and honest. It's going to make the media, forget about trying to keep it a secret, is going to release it. Let them know this has happened. Let them know you're working on it and, you know, regularly update your patients, because I think that's the decent and the right thing to do. The click the link thing, it can be as simple as, you know, your staff that will have access to, you know, to your booking system, patient records, patient payments and all of that. You know, if the system, for example, that takes the payments for private health insurance, if that got hacked, every single dentist is going to be impacted straight away.
Yep.
Because you've all got that machine there that, you know, you swipe the card through, you get the refund back, and then the person pays the difference. So there is going to be a risk to every single practice, different risks depending on the size, what they're holding and things like that. But for, as I said earlier, from the smaller practices, the biggest risk is going to be human error, where one of your staff members get something, thinks it's legitimate, looks like it's come from, you know, ARPA, for example, or, you know, the Dental Association, whatever it might be called, clicks on it and then realises, oh, my goodness, I've got a mess. And I even had a situation, I think it was one of the Catholic dioceses, somewhere, it was either New South Wales or Queensland, where a teaching staff member had clicked a link that she thought was legitimate. How, I have no idea. They asked for her username and password to reset her system, which she provided.
Oh, so gosh.
That got the hacker access to the whole
network
system. And I know this because I got an email from the hackers going, you know, hey, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, this is really weird. And when I rang them to see what was going on, because they didn't bother to tell us, it was like, oh, yeah, one of our staff members clicked a link and gave her personal information to some random person on the internet, thought it was the IT people, but it wasn't. And then they ended up with a mess. So that human error stuff is huge. And that's where having clear guidelines about the use of the work computer and the work IT system is important. And providing education, you know, don't just assume people know this sort of stuff. Prevention is always better than cure. So if you've got to have, you know, a half-day staff learning day about anything, is a new advancement in dental technology and you've got a new device, you know, you're going to have some staff training on that, have staff training on technology use. And, you know, in that can be included your respectful conduct, responsible use, how to avoid, you know, err on the side of caution, don't click it, call someone else in and have a look at it. Another one that often happens is if you are running a Facebook page for your clinic, for example,
yeah.
So clinic Facebook page, perfectly fine, don't have an issue with that. However, if you need more than one administrator for it, never have one person, and the email that they have set that up with or the email that they use to access their admin rights needs to be a standalone email that is not linked to anything else. So don't use the work email to get you into the work Facebook, or don't use your personal email that runs your five other pages as your work one, because the problem is if that one gets compromised, the one, then everything you access is screwed.
Yeah, it's contagion, isn't it?
So I've had that in schools where, you know, the office person manages the school Facebook page with their personal email address. Their personal email gets compromised, so then the school system is stuffed. So set up a separate Gmail, and that is used, you as the boss, if you like, and then allocate another person whose job it is. You know, there's going to be someone there that is responsible for the posting or the updating, as well as the owner of the practice. But separate email, super important.
Yeah. Oh, wow. There's a couple of real pieces of practical and tactical gold there, ladies and gents, because for what it's worth, our practice did get attacked. Going back quite a few years ago now, we had a crypto locker virus. It was exactly as you described. It was an email from Australia Post in inverted commas. Wasn't obviously from them. And the receptionist thought it was legit. And all of our data got locked up. The ransom was demanded, which we did not pay. But thankfully, we had a backup, and thankfully, we were able to restore, and thankfully, we were able to move forward. But it was tough, and it was trying. And oh my goodness me, we learned a lot of lessons that day.
Yeah, I always say, you know, learning as you go and learning from experiences is really, really good in most situations. I don't want you to learn about this because it's happened to you. And it's the same when I talk to kids about, you know, pedophiles, for example. I don't want you to learn about the fact there's bad people in the world because they found you.
Yeah.
I want you to learn because you listened to me and you became aware of it. So then you took steps to protect yourself because, you know, the old saying, prevention is better than cure, stands fast in all of this. Also with the Facebook situation, another thing to consider is, are you going to allow comments on your page? So you put up, you know, the post of the week, whatever you post about, and it might be the fact that, you know, the receptionist's dog had puppies and you put a nice picture of whatever it is. You know, do you allow the people that follow your page to interact with it, or are you using it as a way to share information? So you have to make that choice. Mm. But my tip is if you are allowing people to comment or posts, the dodgy stuff will happen at 2 and 3 in the morning when you're tucked up in bed asleep. So the reputational damage can be great, because if I want to get back at you, you know, Mr. Dentist person that I don't like for whatever reason, it doesn't really matter if it's related to dentistry or not, and I find you've got a Facebook page, I will wait till 1 in the morning, I will get online, I'll write a diatribe of abuse using my fake account, of course, not really fake, but on the surface it is, and that post will stay there until, you know, you see it when you wake up the next day.
Mm.
And that's why I say to schools, you should not allow people to make comments on your page. You use it as a way to share information. Absolutely. But don't allow public comments, because unless you are going to employ someone to sit and watch your page 24/7, it's impossible to manage, you know? And again, you have not thought about this, I can promise you, until it happens. And it's like, oh my God. So, you know, this is all about being proactive and thinking about what can happen before it happens.
While we're talking about monitoring the page and playing whack-a-mole with that sort of stuff, I think I was telling you off air, I had the very unfortunate experience of having a cyber stalker, and it was I'd posted a comment on my personal Facebook page, put a post up about something or other. It was pretty innocuous, and this particular person made just an outrageous comment and slur, and I immediately blocked them, which was the right thing to do. The wrong thing to do, though, is to become curious.
No, but let me say, the right thing to do would have been to report, then block.
True.
We also do it in that order.
Yes.
Because as we found out, when you
unblocked them, because Curious George was going like, what kind of doofus does that? Hey, yeah, let me find out what kind of doofus he really is. And I did find out what a doofus he really is. Because all through my Facebook stuff in front of my clients, he was posting these very, very explicit messages, like off the wall, about some fictional dalliance or whatever was meant to have occurred. And then he found out where our practice was, then tried to call the office and get my mobile phone number. And it was incredibly distressing, because, as you know, once you unblock someone, you can't reblock them for 48 hours. And so I was playing, it was a cat and mouse game through my Facebook profile of he'd post, I'd delete, he'd post, I'd delete, he'd post, I'd delete. Now, we were able to get this situation resolved with the help, albeit slow help, from the federal police and some other people involved as well, who were able to unmask him. But it was terrible. And I'm just curious to ask, have you seen many cases or other situations where people have just been stalked like that? Because I would never have thought that would happen to me. I, honestly, I'm a fairly Well, I reckon I'm a pretty boring kind of character most of the time. I like it that way. I like my life to be pretty mundane and relaxed. And so I would never have thought to have been the target of that. And so I'm thinking if it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone.
It is. It can be something as simple as an innocuous post or comment that just sets off, you know, the trolls of this world that get their joy out of harm. And you know, you've only got to look at it, you know, online, on Twitter, on Facebook. I mean, I'm a target for online abuse at the moment, you know, touch wood. I'm not particularly interesting to people, but, you know, I've gone through times where I've had to not answer phone calls until they left a message because I was getting that many abusive ones. And my phone number can be found online. I put it there for the benefit of those that need my help. But, you know, and people go, well, that's silly. I go, it's not silly because mostly it's okay. But I've had to shut accounts down and suspend them for periods of time because of the abuse I've received online. And it is, and you know, I try not to take it to heart because I know that it's not me personally, it's me as who I am, because I'm vocal and outspoken and I won't shy away from talking about online harms and the fact that, you know, you shouldn't behave this way online and there needs to be, you need to be held to account. But I remember a few years ago now, my husband and I were standing on Los Ramblos in Barcelona when the terrorist attack happened.
Oh my gosh.
So we were caught up in that. You know, we were fine. You know, it wasn't pleasant, but, you know, your police training kicks in and all of that. But, you know, I was getting comments on my Facebook page about, you know, so sad they didn't get you and what a shame they missed you and, you know, all of that. And these are for people that, you know, I don't even know them. So I do become a target. And it's a horrible thing because you have no control. You know, get yourself off the platform. Well, that's not a solution. That gives you some breathing space. And it shouldn't be the victim that has to fix the problem. You know, that's not what victims should be doing. It should be the offender is held to account for their behavior.
Yep.
So, you know, you can be the target just from someone that you didn't like what you posted. It could be just someone that, you know, didn't like your work in your dentist clinic, or it can be a random person that goes, oh, who can I pick on today? This person looks, you know, innocuous and innocent. I'll have a go at them. And, you know, the thing is, don't bite back. Obviously, because that's what they want to see. But reporting the abusive comments is really important because the platforms, although sometimes they're quite slow and some are better than others, they do act. So my advice is you always report the abuse first, then block the user. Don't go digging. If you want to dig, dig first before you block them, as you learned.
Yeah.
But if you block someone, you can't then report what they've done unless you unblock them and then you're stuck for 2 days. That's why we report first, block second. You know, if you want to Google them, Googling is different because that's not using the platform. But, you know, don't tolerate, report and block. If you're going to allow comments and it's worked for you so far, you know how to turn comments off. So if you're, you know, I put a post up recently on my Facebook page and look, I have 30,000 followers on my Facebook page, which, I mean, the numbers mean nothing to me, but the fact that, you know, my alleged reach is a million, can be up to a million people per post. You know, I do find that difficult to get my head around as someone that didn't grow up with social media.
Yeah.
But, you know, by and large, you know, I've got a small number of people that are blocked. Sometimes I remove comments that are, you know, it's not that I don't have to agree with them, but if they're a disrespectful comment or they're factually incorrect, they're gone because I pride myself on sharing correct information. But I put a post up recently. There was a furor in the media about the Presbyterian Church came out and said that gay students or those that are sexually active do not hold the, you know, cannot be a school captain in our schools.
Okay, all right. That's weird, but...
And yeah, no. So they said that they were trying to get an exemption from the Equal Opportunity Commission
right, to
basically prohibit a student that was gay from ever being school captain in one of their schools. You know, so I put that up. I said, you know, your sexuality, your gender, whether you're having sex, whether you're not, and who you're having it with, is irrelevant. Well, it was interesting because the diatribe of abuse I got after posting, you know, that and saying that this is not correct, even from people that have been followers of my page for a long time, I've personally helped with issues that just tore into me. It was like, you know what? I don't have to put up with this. So I just made a post to say I'm turning off comments because of the abuse I was receiving. I leave comments on my page because often people will ask a question. And as I said, 99% of people there on my page are there because they want information and they are respectful. There's the 1%ers that you have to deal with. But I would never hesitate. And this is what you've got to know. If you're going to use a social media platform, I don't care what you're using, please don't use TikTok.
I was going to ask.
I'm not going to pick my dentist because they are all over TikTok.
And they can dance. I would love
money from any dentist or any professional that advertises their services on TikTok. So that's just a side issue. But if you're going to use a platform, and I would say Facebook and Instagram will be the main ones that you're going to be using, know how they work, right? Know everything about them. Because, you know, don't learn on the fly because that's not best practice. If you can't manage the platform, you're not going to be able to manage the experience on it.
The other thing I'm just going to add to that, and this is perhaps slightly outside the scope of this conversation, but what surprised me with my own experience, Susan, was just how upsetting it really is. If I had not experienced that myself, I probably wouldn't have had an insight as to how difficult it is for those people who are attacked by those trolls.
For kids, it's horrible, but adults, you know, as an adult, you are by and large in control of your life. You make your choices and all that. But this puts you outside control.
Yes.
You can't control it. So it is a very different experience for adults that have basically sailed through life without too many hiccups. You know, but other than just normal things that happen, because there's no control over it all.
Now, this is essentially a conversation about business as well, but many of our listeners will have kids. And so I just wondered if we could just spend 5 minutes or so just discussing some do's and don'ts for parents with kids with social media. I alluded to the fact earlier that my wife and I sometimes regarded as the uncoolest parents on the planet. Because
I love the uncool parents.
Oh, mate, I'm the top.
Love the
yeah. So why can't I have this? Why can't, because you're just not old enough, right? And that's when you're 18, then you're officially an adult and you don't need to ask my permission. But I guess the question I wanted to ask about that is the appropriateness or otherwise of social media for kids. If, you know, is there a right age? Is there not a right age? Some, like, how to use it well, what to look out for, just some pitfalls. And again, I know this is not a whole conversation. I know you talk for days and days and days about this stuff, so I know I'm asking you for the super duper condensed version, but just some things for the parents listening to be able to take away.
So as a parent, remember you are the gatekeepers to your child's online world and the buck stops.
Yeah.
And this notion of, oh, I've got to let my child do it because if I don't let them do it, they'll miss out. Well, think about it this way. If all your kids' friends are out stealing cars on the weekend, are you going to let them go with them? All right, let's be honest here. You're going to say no. So it's the same concept. There is no social media platform that you can sign up for under the age of 13. So first and foremost, that is the conversation starter. You are not 13. We are not lying. You're not having it. Simple as. You know, you don't need to go into a great thing. Here are the rules. The rules state you can't be here. We are not going to help you lie to go somewhere you're not allowed to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good thing to do as a parent.
No.
Once they turn 13, then you're going to have a conversation about what they can do, where they can go. There are plenty of parents that say no, hold off longer. Some let them have it at 13. Never, ever put them on TikTok. It's a cesspool for a variety of different reasons, including there's the links back to the Chinese Communist Party. So that's going to be, in my mind, a categoric no. Snapchat would be the next one I'd say no for. Like, I'm the fun police parent here. We know in Victoria, Snapchat has been present in every case of contact offending after grooming for the last 6 years. So you've got to be very, very mindful of TikTok and all the add-on apps that work within it. For my money, the safer option is Instagram with the co-parental controls engaged and clear rules and boundaries. So that one is easier to manage. For the under 13s, Messenger Kids is a better option because your child can't delete the content. You get to choose who they friend and all of that. But it's being an active participant in their online world and understanding that the biggest risk to your child's personal safety is not some random person wandering the streets of where you live. It is someone that's coming into your house through the internet.
It's rather sobering. It's really rather sobering.
But knowledge is power. If you don't know, you can't then. If you don't know what you're trying to protect your children from, you can't protect them.
100%. So, parents, there's some good advice for you. You do with that what you will. I mean, every parent's responsible for their own children and how they raise them, and obviously you make the decisions that are right for you and your family. But thank you for sharing that. I think it's really important to keep our kids safe. But, it's just something we don't want to learn after the fact, as you said earlier.
You'll never forgive yourself. If you could have prevented it, and you didn't.
Susan, we have covered a lot of stuff today. Rather than finishing on the kids stuff, which it feels like we're leaving the party on a bit of a downer, what would be two or three things you would say from a business point of view, best practice, so that we can just, again, synthesize that into a couple of, you know, to-dos so that we just leave them with, I guess, the gospel according to Susan?
Yeah. So if you listen to this, start to think about what you might need to do. Review your policy, write a policy, amend a policy, check you've got that in place to start with, then review your social media. Make sure the person running it's got that different account. Make sure you have rules about the page, because social media is a great tool. Like, we should never forget that. And, you know, used well, it will be an asset to your business. Understand that you do have something valuable to any hacker, be it for reputational or nuisance value, and take the steps that you need to protect yourself. But don't think, not me, right? Accept that this is part and parcel of having tech in our lives. Where do you sit on the risk scale? So be honest about that. And if you do that, you will reap the rewards of having tech in your life.
Susan, thank you so much for sharing that with us today. Really good stuff. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks very much for the chat.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.